Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs. That's $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
To our listeners who have who dialed in, if you give me 1 second here. We are back on the air, and sorry for the glitch. I don't know, I'm getting a little feedback for some reason, but I think I can fix that too.
We should be okay now. I think I've done all the technical, I guess you might say, troubleshooting. So, Dr. Novus, how can you hear me? Am I echoing or am I clear?
You're clear at the moment.
Okay, good. We're fine now. Sorry for the glitch to those who had dialed in and couldn't get in. If you try it again, you should be fine now. And again, those who may have just come on board, you should be able to hear us and you should be able to call in. The number to call is 657-383-0671. 657-383-0671. I have to give a shout out to the United States Navy Information Systems Technology Training Program that I would say beneficiary of over many years, over a couple and a half decades, that gave me the skill, I guess you could call it that, to be able to be cool under fire, as they say, having on too many that I would even want to try to remember, had to, in the face of a lot of stress and things going wrong, to be able to get things back online. So we thank the Navy for the ability to have gotten this show back online. And to get back onto the conversation, what I was going to say, Dr. Novus, and to get your feedback, is that, you know, this issue is going to be resolved by getting people sicker, by putting them right back in the danger zone, in the red zone. You know, it's almost tantamount to having a gas attack, causing gas attack, and telling everyone when they saw the missile or whatever that was going to bring about the spread of the poison gas coming in, to tell everybody to put on their gas masks, you know, their protective masks. And then when people started complaining that they couldn't see around corners and they were bumping in the knee knockers on the ship, you know, and hurting their legs, or that they could not comfortably do what they wanted to do, to say, okay, well, the heck with it, just take your gas mask off so you can be able to function like you normally would function. Well, that to me is insanity. If the poison gas issue is still present, even if it was a big inconvenience, maybe the work had to slow down, you know, but you don't want to kill your whole crew because they are not able to function the way they would like to function. You know, you tell them to do the best you can under the circumstances, and then you try to clear the gas from the ship or from the environment, and then you test it, and once it's been cleared, the all clear has been given, then you say, okay, you know, you can take your mask off. But to do it before that time, tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like that's almost criminal to tell them to go ahead and take your mask off knowing that it's not safe. What do you think?
I think it's extremely dangerous, and I think it would definitely set us up for, a negative glide slope here, you know. So there's a lot of unknowns about this disease, and I know we're learning a lot every day about it. However, the unknowns are just too great. And I think, you know, like I said earlier, the risk to people and the risk to businesses and the risk to the economy will cost us more if we come out of the current posture that we're in now to try to get back everybody back to work to stabilize the economy. I think we should stay in this a little longer to make sure that we don't have people undermining or, you know, not really sure if they're affected or not, and we just got to make sure that we're taking the safest approach possible, because this disease is extremely deadly, especially for Afro-Americans and other people of color. So we need to be extremely cautious about, you know, trying to get back and return to some type of normalcy, and just weather the storm a little longer to make sure that we're doing things right.
Well, I totally agree with you. And today I learned something new. My wife told me that she had learned from some source. She has been watching these various briefings on the TV throughout the day. And she told me that even the face mask that covers your mouth and your nose may not keep people from being infected, because now they're saying that you might have to wear eye goggles, because this can actually penetrate you by way of the eyes. And the thing about it is, if that's true, if it's not just something that floats on air, drops of air, and even if it is, it's possible it could be coming in through any orifice, it be coming in through your ears. But even worse than that, and I don't really know exactly, I can't recall where I heard this, but this is about a week ago. Someone said that this is not even a virus. They're calling it a virus, but they said it's really not a virus. You know, virus, unlike a bacteria, is still a living organism, even though it doesn't have the same features as a bacteria, but it's still an organism that can be killed, you know, or you can develop an immunity for it, whatever. But they're saying that this is actually a very small, minute molecule, which in my mind, and I'm not a scientist, you know, and certainly not, you know, a person that is scientifically prepared to say this, but it's almost like that example I gave you a few minutes ago, the poison gas, but I'll take it another step further, and we'll say a chemical attack, to where, you know, some droplets of this stuff are in the air, and attach themselves to your skin and penetrate your skin, they can get inside and work their damaging effects. So what some people are saying is that this so-called virus actually is more similar to a poison gas attack situation, even though we know that it's spread from one person to another through touch or even through breathing, but it's a whole totally different animal, as we might say, than what we're used to dealing with. And if that's the case, even a vaccine is not going to fix the problem. The only thing that's going to fix the problem is for people to stop passing it around, if there's a way that they can be, I guess you might say, treated so that they don't pass it around. So there's just so much unknown, as you said, about it, mm-hmm. that it certainly is foolhardy to disregard the reality that this thing is a real killer, that it's definitely not under control, that's still running amok throughout the world, and to pretend like that we can go back to business as usual, to me, is almost insanity. I mean, it's like, you know, somebody that sees, you know, comes home, they park the car in the driveway, and they see smoke coming out of the windows and through the blinds or the window. You know, they can see what's obviously fire, and they decide they're just going to walk on in their house and sit in the living room like nothing is happening. I mean, that's really insane. And that's almost mm-hmm. what it seems like our leadership at the national level is telling people to do. What do you think?
There are definitely some mixed messages that are going on. And I think as citizens, we have to be more cautious and we have to be prudent on how we receive the information, because we know, you know, at every level there's some misinformation, and we have to listen to the entrusted, you know, experts that we have in the country. And I think, you know, we have to be very careful not to listen to misinformation, you know, because I tell you now, with social media and everything, everybody is an expert on the coronavirus, right? So, you know, we have to be very careful in how we live, how we, you know, listen to that information, where we get it from. And this, like I said earlier, there's so little known about this disease that, you know, we have to remain cautious in our approach, and we have to remain smart, and we have to, you know, remain compassionate for other people, especially those of us who are or might be asymptomatic to it. And you don't want to infect someone who has an underlying condition and might not be able to survive it, right? So we have to be very caring in that aspect. But I just think that there's so much information on it. On every way you turn, somebody's putting out information about this virus. And with me being a researcher, I would tell you, I scrutinize a lot of stuff because, you know, I think at this point, there are some studies out there and there are some smart people on this, but I just don't think we know enough about it yet. So the best thing we can do is what we've been doing, and that is staying home, you know, and when we go out 6 feet or more apart from somebody, we're wearing a mask, you know, we're washing our hands, we're being very careful, and we're just taking a very slow approach to this because I can understand where, you know, the administration is coming from, because we are losing, I mean, economically, this country is losing millions and millions of dollars every day, even the major setbacks, and we got people at home with no jobs, we got people at home, you know, who are really struggling, and so, of course, you would want to turn the economy around and get people back to work and get things back to the way we had it before this virus came. But I just don't think that rushing back, and I don't think, you know, listening to misinformation or accepting misinformation is going to help us, because, you know, I saw a story this morning on one of the news stations where there was a young lady, African-American lady, looked to be in her early 20s. She was a college student. And she said that she took it for granted and she caught it. And, you know, she said it was a very frightening time for her. So I think we can all learn from that. And so I just ask that we all stay smart and we all do what we've been doing. And to be honest with you, a lot of companies have already took their employees out of the workspace and put them at home working remote to much as possible. However, you know, we do have some essential people out there working, like in the grocery stores, the hospital, the first responders. You know, there's a lot of people still out there. So those people are, you know, battling this every day. So us rushing back out there is not going to help them and help their cause anyway. So, I mean, let's be cautious, you know, let's take it slow.
Well, I totally agree with you, and we won't go on much longer, but I did want to offer this too, because it seems like there's two factors that are really prevalent in addition to the health crisis, and one, of course, is the economic catastrophic economic effects, and the other, of course, is the desire of the president to regain what he felt was a easy slide back into a second term, or into a second term, because he was bragging about how well the economy was doing under his administration, et cetera, et cetera. And now that seems to be gone down the tubes, as they say. But I'm just wondering, not being an economist, but still being a critical thinker, you know, if the masterminds of America's business world, the economists, the people like yourself that have doctorate degrees in business, and others that have been trained to think outside of the box, as they say, convene a national conference, or maybe on a statewide level, convene state conferences and develop some type of network the same way that back in the 60s, as the Cold War was expanding into the information age, that the government funded DARPA, some of the main universities that had researchers that had information, critically important information concerning our defense opportunities, were being connected via the newest invention of the internet. And so, you know, the technology is there much more advanced than it was back then for groups of people like yourself and other business scientists and economists to come up with a plan so that when it is safe, the economy can be jump-started, you know, within a 30 to 90-day period, you know, that people can get back to work, that things can start moving again, people can start getting checks. This group of stimulus checks doesn't have to be the end of that particular idea. You know, the government can print all the money that they want to. I mean, there's no supply limit on the amount of paper or even the amount of coins. They don't always have to use, you know, specie like gold or silver. They've already started putting all kind of low-grade materials in the coins. It's a matter of what these particular media of exchange can buy. So the economists can say, well, look, you know, that we want all the farmers and all of the people in the meat business, et cetera, to go ahead and put your stuff in the stores, and we'll give you some species, kind of like scrip, you know, which we used when I was over in Korea. We didn't get paid in American dollars because they didn't want the dollars to get into the Korean black market. And the Koreans really didn't want that script because the only place you could really use it was on the military base. But the fact of it is that it had value because you could trade it for things that you wanted. And so even though some people may say, well, printing all this money may cause an inflation, well, you know, inflation is a function, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a function of supply and demand. Obviously, you know, if your $1 bill will only buy two slices of bread instead of a whole loaf, you know, because of the fact that the money is in such great demand and the loaf is in such short supply, yeah, you got a real problem. But if at the economist level, you know, they develop a model so that this inflation, quote unquote, does not occur, so that this paper money or whatever species they print, you know, is giving you what I would say a reasonable return in terms of product, you know, then they can go ahead and they're smart enough to make this restart of the economy work. It doesn't have to be that we're going to have another Great Depression. It's just, I think the problem was, is that under, I'm not trying to paint a bad picture of Mr. Herbert Hoover, but I think under his administration, the people were just unable to think out of the box. They were blind, you know, using old school, what we might say, outdated ideas, economic ideas, when Roosevelt and his team of brilliant people took over, they put a whole new model out there. He said, we'll print all the money we need and we'll get people going and eventually things will settle down into a reasonable perspective. Now, of course, for him, and I'm not, you know, thinking that I'm not preaching to the choir because you know as much about this as I do, the thing that saved the butt was the fact that they were able to, through the war production, you know, to get people actually back on jobs. And that made a lot of sense. You know, not that they started a war, not that they wanted to be in a war, but the more people that you had working, the more people that were buying things. And eventually, even though they had a brief recession after the war was over, eventually things kind of settled back into place. And I'm just saying that we've got enough smart people, yourself included, you know, that can get around the table. And when it's safe, you know, to have people get back out there to figure out, you know, how we can not have a depression, but how we can within 3 to 6 months, you know, have people living at least on the same level that the common people were living before. Now, one of the things I was saying in our close is this, that I heard this medical doctor, this African-American medical doctor, before I came on the show, I was looking at this YouTube video, and she was saying something that I've heard others say in the last few days, is that even Joe Biden said it, that what has happened because of the inordinate proportion of black and Hispanic people that are dying from the coronavirus, and many people that aren't even on the stats because they're dying at home, that it's opening up the wound, it's revealing the ugliness of the systemic issues, racially based issues that are in need of getting fixed. So that's something else that maybe if the Democrats are able to take back the Congress and the White House, and, you know, if you have people, whether it's Biden or whether it's somebody else, because right now it's still not clear if he's going to be the one to carry the ticket, even though right now he's the only one that we see. But things could change. You never know. But he at least represents a mindset that says we need to look, as a result of what's been exposed by this virus, to some of the real societal problems. So, you know, that's basically the only thing I had to say on that. What do you think?
You know, I want to make 2 points. The first point I want to make is that concerning the virus and when we're going to, you know, I guess as a nation return to work, is one is going to be based on how the governors of the states feel about the pandemic in their particular state. And the other one is we'll get a clear vision and a clear clue of how the pandemic is being controlled when we start understanding what's happening at some of these hospitals, like, for instance, in some of the large metropolitan areas, when they start to see a decline in patients coming in with the virus and are people coming in with, you know, like symptoms, that will be a clear indication that something is taking place and something is working. So that'll be a clear point, you know. I think the other thing, you know, that concerns me more than anything else concerning this virus is that a lot of things that we're doing today concerning the pandemic is from an ad hoc nature. Now, we do have agencies within the Washington, D.C. area that are pretty experienced at, you know, managing viruses and pandemics. But nothing has ever hit us like this. And what I would like to see going forward, from this day going forward, from the government, is an assertive effort of experts put together that can prevent, and I'm not saying we will never be able to prevent the spread of disease, but we can have a group of experts that can better assist the nation going forward, regardless of who's in office, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. You know, it's going to be agnostic to that. What we got to have is people that are willing to think out of the box and people that can enable the government to bring the public and private sectors together to work as, you know, a team. Because, you know, this pandemic has opened our eyes on so many levels. But one of the most critical areas where we've seen where we were hurt as a nation is where we have shifted and outsourced a lot of our manufacturing capability overseas, because things can be manufactured overseas relatively cheaper than they can in this country. And then you have to ask the question, is that trade-off worth it? To different people it is, to some people it's not. So I think all those things got to come into play, because we can never, ever put ourselves in this predicament. Because while we're battling this this pandemic, can you imagine if we had an adversary that was brave enough to attack us? We would be in a hurt locker, because, you know, we got so many of our resources tied up into battling this healthcare pandemic. You know, and we got to start asking the question, how do we balance the pandemic and balance national security at the same time? So the one thing we are seeing during this pandemic, we are seeing a tremendous uptick in cyber attacks on people, on organizations, on the government, you just name it. Because, you know, the cyber criminals thinking, these people are so tied up in battling this pandemic, now it's time for me to act. And so the element of surprise, right? So those are the things, you know, that concerns me, and where do we as a nation should be focusing. And, you know, I would love for this nation to get back to work and everybody to resume their lives like we had it before this outbreak. But I just don't think that it's going to be the same. And we all know somebody who's been either infected with the virus, or we know somebody or a family who has been affected by, you know, a layoff or firing or whatever in that category. So there's a lot going on here. And so there is an increased, you know, a level of hypeness to get everything back to normalcy. But I just don't think, you know, it's the right time. And I also feel that we have to listen to the governors, not just, I mean, I understand and I appreciate, you know, the president coming out and doing his thing every day. But I think at the state level, the governors are doing a lot of good work. I mean, especially like in the Seattle area, they were able to get this thing under control like it was nobody's business, and they did it. And so I would like to see, you know, New York get under control. I'd like to see Atlanta get under control. I'd like to see Detroit get under control. You know, and even some of the areas where there's outbreak that we don't know yet. We have to assume that there's, you know, outbreak in some of these rural areas that we don't know, because these people are out in such, you know, long distance away from a healthcare provider that they're at risk and they don't know it. So how do we, you know, think about moving forward and treating those patients? And so that's my concern. I just feel like the pandemic is here, and not one of us like it, so we have to deal with it, though. But there's so many things that we have to take into account and work through so to ensure this never, ever happens again. When I mean happen again, I mean the uncoordinated responses, the lack of critical supplies, and even the lack of critical talent, and, you know, like the shortage of nurses, the shortage of doctors in some areas. When you see that the New York Police Department, 20% of them are out of work right now due to, you know, ailments from this virus. So we can never, ever get caught like this again. So we're going to need to prepare for this. And the one way to prepare for it is through drills and exercise. Even if it's inconvenient to a lot of us, we must prepare for this so it can never, ever put us in this predicament again.
Well, thank you very much. I'm just going to stop in just a minute, but I'm just going to announce the number again. If anyone had actually gone up on the internet after we came back on after that short technical issue. I want to announce the number in case anybody did decide they wanted to join. Any of you that may have come on and want to participate, we won't be much longer, but we want to give anyone out there a chance to give us your opinion on what Dr. Novus has said, or if you heard me, what I said, or what you may be thinking. The number is 657-383-0671. 657-383-0671 to call in, and we'll go for probably another 5 or 10 minutes to give you a chance if you would like to join us. And in the meantime, I certainly agree with everything you said, Dr. Nobles, and I just want to add this. After the Second World War, President Truman decided, for many reasons, I'm sure, not the least of which was probably compassion for our defeated enemy and our allies in Europe, to initiate the Marshall Plan. After having accepted the resignation, you know, for retirement, not from the Army, but for retirement from the job of the Chief of Staff of the Army. Then he, I believe, appointed him Secretary of Defense, and later Secretary of State, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But at any rate, George Marshall was credited with being the engineer of the massive rebuilding project in Europe, including our defeated enemy, Germany, the Marshall Plan. And some of the best minds, you don't hear a lot about this compared to what you hear about the civilian and military leaders that helped to win the Second World War, both in Europe and in Asia. But still, that rebuilding of Europe, and we've both been to Europe and have seen that you hardly can even get a hint that there was ever a war. I mean, they even rebuilt Monte Cassino, I believe, which was totally destroyed by the Allies, since it was a perch from which the Germans were able to have free access to not only shooting at our planes in the air, but the troops coming into the area in Italy. And maybe even with their missiles or rockets, they had even been able to shoot out to sea. So that had to go. I mean, I'm sure it was a very hard decision for the military plans to make, but they knew they had no choice. But you go to Italy now. I spent 7 years in Italy, stationed in Italy, traveled throughout Italy, not just Italy, but also Spain, France, Austria, England, and Germany. And you just can't really see. I mean, there may be places where you can see, you know, some real damage that was left over, but I never saw anything to indicate. Same thing when I went to Japan, in fact. I visited Japan on several occasions when I was stationed in Korea during the early 60s. And I saw no evidence that we had basically destroyed the infrastructure of Japan. So I guess what I'm saying, not to prolong that, is that American ingenuity, American industriousness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and even to a level unthought of 50 years ago, 100 years ago, or right after the World War, back 70-some years ago, we can do it. America can come back. Now, sure, it may look different. There'll be maybe a lot more people that are teleworking from home, and there may be different ways of people even shopping for groceries. There may be a whole new paradigm of people having groceries delivered to their homes. A lot of changes will happen, but that's normal. especially after any type of catastrophe, in the process of coming back, because things had to be generated and created that weren't being done before, a lot of these things stay around. Just as I was saying, the Cold War is what produced the internet. A lot of people don't know the history. You do. But had it not been for the Cold War and us trying to find a way to get ahead of the power curve after having been embarrassed by the Russians during the Sputnik era, you know, the government, it wasn't publicized, it wasn't put out there in the daily news, but the government was determined to find whatever resources that they could to hook scientists together to give us the edge that we thought we had, to give it back. And as a result, now we're on the internet and it's part of our daily life. So I guess what I'm really saying is that I see is that the indomitable spirit of the American people of all races and ethnic backgrounds is still strong. It's still strong. And the one thing that I am not very pleased with, and I'll end on this note, is that to have a strong body and a weak mind spells disaster. Spells disaster. I'm not going to sound like, you know, what I am is a church preacher, but if we look back at the story of Samson was besotted by this lady named Delilah. He was so in love with Delilah, he lost his sense. He lost all sense of reality, believing that his enemies were his friends because they were her people. And even though he was the strongest man in the kingdom, he ended up bringing the temple down on himself and those people, his enemies, he could have been a peacemaker, he could have been a negotiator, he could have had a lot more value than being a dead martyr. So I'm just saying that we need to have leadership, and this is not a political speech, but I'm just saying we need to have leadership that's rational, that's intelligent, that's clear thinking, and it's certainly not narcissistic, you know, not self-aggrandizing and self-centered. Until we get that kind of leadership off the table, out of the White House, out of the mix, we're going to continue with all of the brains like Fauci and others, even the brilliant young doctor, Jerome Adams. No matter what level of intelligent leadership we have in a supporting role, as long as the main character has got some issues that are very obvious, we're going to have problems. So I'm not restricted. This is not a, what we would say, 501, you know, C3, you know, program. I'm not getting any government funds. It's not a program where I'm restricted in taking a political position, even though I normally try to stay relatively neutral because I don't want to start any firestorms. As you know, our co-host has a different opinion. So I usually don't voice my opinion, but I would say to my audience, whoever's listening, think carefully when the election time comes about a strong body with a weak mind at the head is a remedy. Recipe for a catastrophe. Just keep that in mind. I'll give you the last word, Dr. Novus, and then I'm going to leave. I don't see anybody else to join us and wrap up an academic requirement that I have to do this evening. But you can always call me anytime to talk offline. But did you want to follow up, close out with anything?
The only thing I close out with is that, you know, in the midst of this, there are a lot of just heroic individuals who've done some fabulous things and who continue to do some extraordinary things for the people of this country. And I really had the opportunity to think and see some things very clearly now. Because of the pandemic, a lot of things that we really enjoy, like sports, have really been put on hold, kind of, you know, isolated. And now we get to see the world from a different perspective, and how what makes our country run and grind every day the way we do it. And it's not sports, and it's not, you know, the millionaires and the entertainers, even though those people are fantastic and they do what they do. However, you know, we get to see the truck drivers, the nurses, the doctors, the people working in the grocery stores, the people working, you know, in the hospitals, and just ordinary people doing ordinary things every day. And, you know, we should all learn from this, that regardless of how much money or wealth or fame you have, something like a pandemic can bring you to a point to where it really doesn't matter. And so my point, that my closing point will be that we should be thankful, even though we're fighting in some difficult times, we should be thankful, and we should be more loving towards mankind, and we should do everything in our heart to assist each other in being better, not just because of the pandemic, but just throughout our lives to make sure that, you know, we are enabling mankind to be better.
Well, thank you for that closing statement. To all of those who are listening tonight, you will be able to go up online to hear the show that has been going on for now at least 45 minutes or so since we came back on there after the technical issue. So you can hear the conversation that has gone on, and we invite you to come back on the program to be a participant if you want to speak, if you just want to listen. At 8 o'clock next Saturday, we ask everyone to keep those in your prayers who have lost loved ones, who are about to lose loved ones. And also, just I could say this on the air, I don't think it's any problem. Notice I did hear from Brother Graham, and his wife is back home now, so keep them in your prayers, because that was another one of those close situations. I'm sure that the prayers that we all sent out worked, but she's back home now resting and being cared for at home, so I'm so happy. I got the call from him to let me know that. But for all of you, we all know someone, or we'll probably know someone in the next few months that's been touched by the virus, even if it doesn't mean that somebody's been sick or passed. You know, people have lost their jobs. People are going to suffer economically. Even some people are going to have some emotional, psychological, what I would say, fallout from this. So keep everyone in prayer. Again, we thank all of you. We thank you, Dr. Knowles, for being on the show tonight. And with that, we close, and we hope that you will join us all again on next Saturday. Be good, be kind, be loving, be prayerful, and be safe. God bless.